Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock on this 22nd day of February. We have a terrific panel. We have a lot to discuss, and we welcome you to join us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, if you would like to join in and weigh in on the discussions up for, I was going to say discussion, but then I used that twice. I'll say up for bid this morning. Let me introduce everybody to you, and we will get started. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. You know, I made the mistake of watching the beginning of My Fair Lady on the telly before we came on. What a wonderful movie that is.
Yeah.
You know, you're a critic. You know good from bad, but nothing compares with that film. It was just unbelievable.
That's great. So the bad part for you is that you got to do this and can't finish watching it, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah.
That's correct.
Well, I'm sure it'll be on again.
That is the That's correct. That is the bad part.
Yeah, they'll be on again.
It's been on a lot lately.
Yeah, good stuff, though. What a great movie. We go to the immigration, our immigration attorney partner with the Albany law firm of Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna, Sienna Freeman Tolbert. Good morning, Sienna. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. And I haven't watched My Fair Lady before. I'll add it to my list.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. You have to do it anyway. And while you're watching it, you should ask yourself the following question. What do you think the Queen of England thought of this film when she saw it? Unbelievable.
Yeah, good stuff. Get me to the church on time. Great. The other voice we just heard was political consultant and lobbyist and My Fair Lady enthusiast, Libby Post. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
Good morning. I watched it a couple of weeks ago. It's on, I think they're showing it on either Turner or AMC. I can't remember
it's
which
on, it's
one.
On
but
it's Turner. Yeah.
Turner?
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I love the score and the libretto, and I've seen it on Broadway, you know, when I was younger. And it's just, I mean, I know it's as sexist as hell. I get that. And probably a little classist too, but boy, the music and the lyrics are great. And Rex Harrison was an amazing sexist, but he knew how to walk through a song better than anybody ever did, because he doesn't really sing.
No,
he just sort of walks through the songs, and it's great. I love it. It's one of my favorite.
And she's terrific too.
Ever,
and she's terrific. She didn't do the singing.
And Audrey Hepburn. Yeah. She wasn't singing, but she was good.
Oh, she was wonderful.
Julie Andrews would have probably been better, but that's okay.
Yeah.
No.
We'll leave our bitterness aside on that. Hey, Mal.
Yeah, that's right. We will.
Malcolm Nance is a former spy. Anything you'd like to add about our discussion on My Fair Lady, Malcolm?
No. I mean, I love a musical as much as the next guy. I like My Fair Lady. It's a very good musical. And, You're right. There wasn't a lot of singing in some parts of it. There was a lot of talking. Rex, that's just that style back then, when you didn't have auto-tune.
Right. It was like Lee Marvin and Paint Your Wagon. Yeah, just sort of mumble your way through it. Yeah. Malcolm Nance is counterterrorism expert and best-selling author, and we're thrilled to have him on the program this morning. So let's get started with what's going on. And we will begin with this story, which is a grim milestone that we are approaching. U.S. COVID deaths at 500,000, half a million people, roughly 1 year since the first known death by the coronavirus in the United States. An unfathomable toll is nearing the loss of a half a million people. No other country has counted so many deaths in the pandemic. More Americans have perished from COVID-19 than on the battlefields of World War I, World War II, and the Vietnam War combined. Just think about that. The milestone comes at a hopeful moment. New virus cases are down sharply, deaths are slowing, and yes, vaccines are steadily being administered. But there is a concern about emerging variants of the virus, and it may be months before the pandemic is, quote-unquote, contained. Each death has left untold numbers of mourners, a ripple effect of loss that has swept over towns and cities. Each death has left an empty space in communities across America, a bar stool where a regular used to sit, one side of a bed unslept in, a home kitchen without its cook. The living find themselves amid vacant places, once occupied by their spouses, parents, neighbors, and friends, the nearly 500,000 coronavirus dead. If you think back to 6, 7, even 8 months ago, where that we were still being promised that this would end and we would not get beyond 100 or 200,000. And since the fall, this virus has taken off and the deaths have been steadily increasing at very scary levels. So even as the news does get better, there are still over 1,000 people dying a day, between 1 and 2,000 people a day, which is still awful. And this continues to be a great issue, especially, as I mentioned, with the variants and with the stalled rollout in many places of the vaccine. So we'll go around the bend, go around the room on this one, Alan.
Well, let me just say that we are very grateful that we have a vaccine and that it is apparently doing its work. CNN is reporting this morning that the Pfizer vaccine and studied in Israel stops it all. That's pretty cool. And I'm sure we're going to get through this. The real question is, what happens next? There'll be others like this. And what have we learned? Have we learned enough so that we can be prepared for the next go round, whatever you're going to call it? Because this is what is now expected. And if we don't, we're fools. That's for sure. I keep thinking back to Trump ripping off his mask, encouraging his followers not to wear masks, getting the disease himself and yet putting it on other people and allowing them to get it so that when they die, some of them actually say, I should never have listened to him. It really just boggles the mind.
All very sad. Libby Post.
I remember when this whole thing started, a friend whose husband is an infectious disease doctor will probably get this in this country. And I was shocked by the concept of that, just that alone. Halfway there now. And, I've said this before and I'll say it again. I lay this squarely at the feet of Donald Trump. If the federal government had done half of what the Biden administration has done in a month, we'd be in a much better position. But he was concerned, as we saw in Bob Woodward's book, Rage, to scare people, not wanting to lose money, not wanting to do this. He understood how horrible this was, but, we can't scare people and we can't lose money. And he put profits over people, which is stupid, because 500,000 deaths mean those are 500,000 less consumers for Trump's profit margin. And it's just it just seemed like there was no concept of the long term impact that this was going to have on the country and on our psyche. I mean, these stories that we read this morning of these people not being able to walk into a room, selling their homes, breaking down when they finally sell their husband's car because he's been gone for 6 months. I mean, these are real people with real lives and real emotions. And that is not something that Donald Trump or the Republicans, for that matter, who rallied around him, have. The emotional quotient is just not there.
And you kept on thinking that, you wondered what it would take so that it would get there, and then it never came. And I
right.
think that was really the most disheartening part of it, especially as we saw you know, I've lost track. I don't know how we are scientifically explaining, you know, that was a second wave or third wave or whatever. But, you know, from the time after summer and going into the holidays of Thanksgiving and the Christmas and New Year season, I mean, it was a lot of people and really deadly. Sienna.
I think that this, it's so important that the media is covering this, I don't want to call it a milestone, but this data point in our history, because unfortunately in a lot of marginalized communities and people, communities of people of color, there's still a conversation being had as we speak right now, whether or not to take the COVID vaccine. A lot of my older relatives are having that conversation, and believe it or not, they're still balancing whether or not to take this COVID vaccine. And so I think it's important that, you know, this is covered and people understand that people are still dying from this, because I think for me, that's what's most important, is that people need to be more informed about taking the vaccine and what the implications of COVID is and the fact that we do have this variant around. So that's what it, where it hits home for me a little bit more, because I think a lot of people assume that everyone's going to take the vaccine. And no, there's still conversations being had about whether or not to take the vaccine.
And what are they saying? And Sienna, what are they saying, your relatives who don't want to take it? What are their worries?
They honestly, they're scared about taking the vaccine. What is it going to do to me? What are the side effects? But also they're harking back to, you know, how people of color were treated in the past. Like everyone, that's the huge conversation right now. There's this huge natural medicine movement. And they are really, you know, a lot of my family members are doing things outside of the medical Western medicine. And so a lot of people are just very skeptical of the vaccine. I mean, nothing convinces me. So I'm not really, you know, I spend most of my time just making sure they inform them and telling them, you know, watch what's on TV, listen to Dr. Fauci. But a lot of people are concerned about it and they're not comfortable with it. They're just not.
And yet a lot of people.
It's a lot of wait and see.
And yet around where I am, you know, in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, people are banging on the doors to get that vaccine. Do your relatives suspect, people of color, do they suspect that there's a different way in which the vaccine will be administered to their people than to, you know, white folks?
There's this conversation going on about how people of color, you know, the whole people of color have a higher pain tolerance and how the medical profession treats people of color differently, right? So you hear all these conversations. We've heard about the maternity treatment for Black women. And so all that makes individuals distrusting of the medical community, unfortunately. So example, my mom in Ohio, she, you know, after I spoke to her, she was able to get an appointment for this Thursday, upcoming Thursday, and she just booked it last week, Wednesday. Right. And so there's just this, you know, in New York, I know people are driving all the way to Utica to get an appointment. So it's just it's funny to see how people in different states and different communities are responding to the vaccine. But I think this number and this milestone is very important.
Malcolm Nance.
You know, I think a lot of this stems from the very fact that Donald Trump so poisoned the well so early in this pandemic. And that he went from this is nothing to this is a little bit serious, but don't worry, we'll open the country up at Easter. You know, and as an African-American man with type 2 diabetes who's nearing his sixth decade, I'm one of those people that would run to get this vaccine and then use my platform to tell my community to get it. But when you're talking about a person who we now know is proven is a sociopath, a murderous sociopath, they said as many as 400,000 of these people did not need to die had the actions that we see are being taken now had been taken when they were necessary 1 year ago. I saw a very interesting statistic that said Korea is a country of 8.1 million people, and they lost 1,300 people. And the state of South Carolina, which, as you know, is very heavily African-American, that's where my family's from, they have the exact same population, and they've lost almost 9,000 people. 9 times the amount. And it's principally because the administration made it clear that this was nothing. I don't think it was just about money with Trump. We've said it 1,000 times on this program. I know Alan will chime in. The man is a sociopath. He has no empathy for anyone but himself and his ability to make money. These people's deaths mean nothing. Yeah. And they will be mocking Joe Biden tomorrow, who is going to go out and light candles for the dead. That's the sign of what we're seeing here.
And again, you know, we keep on waiting for a turning point. And even as we hit this, as Santa mentioned, you know, it's important that we look at these moments and take stock of where we are. And I know a lot of people, I heard it yesterday on several different networks of people saying, well, you know, internationally, this virus has gotten away from everyone. But unfortunately, we're still the winner. You know, we have the worst of just about everything in every category. And that has to account for some sort of major mismanagement that causes that. Right, Alan? I mean nobody's
saying.
Yeah,
but just think of it, Joe. If I'm listening to Malcolm correctly, and that statistic is so alarming, 4 out of 5 people could have been saved.
Right, right.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and that's what's that is unbelievable, and that's what's so.
And I still
criminal negligence.
It's true, Malcolm, and I cannot figure politically what he thought he was gaining by condemning all those people to death. I just don't get that part of it.
One of the
early on, I think it was just murderous revenge when New York State was exploding. I don't think he cared about anyone up here at all. And he was blackmailing blue states. The man is a sociopath. Therefore, we got what the right wing put into power.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with this conversation. We would love to hear from you. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Sienna Freeman-Tolbert, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post make up this morning's panel. Again, we welcome your input. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll continue our conversation after this news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, talking about this nation reaching the $500,000, excuse me, my apologies, $500,000 mark of loss in this country due to COVID and the COVID death rate approaching 500,000 people. We have letters on this. I'd like to go to those. And Rich writes, Lori Garrett is a well-respected science writer and is very knowledgeable about pandemics. She says Trump has committed pandemicide. One of the stories that I want to get to in a few minutes is holding the president accountable, not just for this, but for many other things, too. And we'll talk about that in just a second. Ken writes, now that we have reached this grim coronavirus milestone, I wonder if the panel noticed or thought of an increasing tendency to scrutinize the state governors, particularly ones in the blue states, about their managing of the pandemic, laying the death toll at the feet of the states rather than the sainted orange one. We already have Governor Cuomo being vilified. Doesn't this seem to be the start of an undertow to exonerate Trump and reconstitute himself for the next go-round? Anyone on that?
Well, not in my mind, it doesn't. You know, I think, as we've been talking about all morning, this former president was responsible for a good deal of what has happened. And I love the term pandemicide because I think it's exactly what he did. He's a terrible man. And the thought of a kid walking into a grocery store with a gun and spending much of his life in prison for it. And here's this guy who we have already discussed today being responsible for maybe 400,000 deaths. And he walks free. It's unbelievable.
And I also think any Republican in this state who is going to try to go after the governor.
Libby, it sounds like you're...
this issue hold and it, on what, the nursing
Libby,
home.
Libby, it may be your phone. It may be your voice.
No,
but
it's,
it may be your
it's
phone.
Opal.
No, I'm just teasing. I'm teasing.
But yeah. it sounds like you're. It sounds like you're gargling sparklers. So if you could, but if you could just disconnect and reconnect, Mike will be there on the other end, and hopefully that'll clear it up.
Yeah.
All right. So you do that, and we'll Sienna, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think it does not, you know, the fact that they're going after their state governments, I think we're going to see a lot of litigation, and they're not going to stop at the state government. They're going to see people going all the way to the top, to Donald Trump and what happened during his administration. We already have the footage of him admitting that he knew it was worse than it really, and he did not move forward with it. So I think there's going to be a lot of litigation when we come out the other side of this. I think a lot of attorneys, a lot of cases are just waiting to see what happens at the end. But I think a lot of people are building cases right now. You're going to see commercials. Did you or a family member have COVID vaccine? You know, and you're going to see people litigating this a lot. It's going to happen. They're going to be suing the states, and they're going to be suing the federal government as well. But people will have to be held accountable for
that's
this.
That's just beginning, right?
You know, it's so interesting what you just said about his having admitted that he knew it. Of course, we know something else about him, right? At CNN, we know he's a liar. So you don't really know when he uttered that. You know, it may be self-protecting himself, whether or not he was lying.
That's true.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Libby.
What I was trying to say before as I was gargling, I'm not quite sure what was happening.
It's very important to gargle, by the
way. It is. Any Republican in New York State, like a Nick Langworthy or a Steve McLaughlin or any of the folks in the legislature who supported Trump and backed him up and didn't question what he was doing around the coronavirus and his response to the pandemic, who now goes after the governor because of what they consider to be a nursing home scandal, is complicit in all of this because they gave Trump support while people were dying, and now they see a political opportunity to try and take Cuomo down, and it's just an absolute disgusting display of bare-knuckled politics without regard to anyone's life.
You know,
and
I
they call
this
themselves the pro-life party.
You know,
point.
I mentioned this on the my morning commentary this morning, but I'm getting some mail. Most of the mail I'm getting, Libby, is very pro-Trump. Very pro-Cuomo, my Freudian problem here. Very pro-Cuomo. But the ones that are yelling at me are so bad that I send them to the police station.
Wow.
And, they're not good. And even if I'm done away with, I think it's good that the police have some leads.
Malcolm, we have this letter from Lucian who says, considering that Trump had all of the facts while knowingly and admittedly lying about it, shouldn't his purposeful spreading of this disease be considered crimes against humanity bordering on genocide? Please ask Malcolm.
Well, I am now a big fan of the phrase pandemicide.
Yeah.
And that's a very good technical definition. I mean, he allowed it to spread. We now know he deliberately allowed it to spread. The memos came out like a month ago showing that in July of last year, they were openly planning to do herd immunity, which means that they would allow that. We had on this very show multiple times said that we had seen indications that that was what was happening. And they were talking like the pandemic was completely over. And it did end for Trump as soon as the election campaign started. No, it's not crimes against humanity, but I certainly think that there, you know, somebody who's a lawyer will have to come out and argue this for me. But I certainly think that there's a case here for, you know, for criminal negligence or, you know, for a class action lawsuit. You can't hide behind the presidency for everything. you know? So that's just one thing that will have to be considered. And I really think it's time for a national commission on the pandemic. You know, Cuomo, I'll give Cuomo his props early on. Maybe he covered up that stuff, and he needs to be held accountable in the media and in the state for that. But you know what? He brought us back from the brink. New York State was a disaster, and he gave us the leadership we didn't have at that time. That's what you can give him credit for. But you know what? On a national scale, with the White House literally saying they would not give states materials because they weren't nice to them or had insulted the president, that's murder.
We have a couple of letters that I want to get to here. Sienna, this one for you. Minorities voice loudly their belief that COVID hit their communities harder than any other. Now that the vaccine is available, many of them are finding excuses not to get it, even though it is the exact same one everyone else is getting. I am 71, white, and I've had both shots and am fine. Reluctance to get vaccinated gives no one the right to complain if he or she gets COVID. So that's Judy's reaction. How would you counter that, Sienna?
I would just say, you know, you have to remember the communities that you're dealing with. And if there's already a distrust between them and the medical community and them and the government at large, it's hard to trust that this vaccine is going to be helpful to them. I mean, it's just really hard to, you know, for a lot of people to think that the government wants to help them sometimes. It really is. Or that this will work in their favor. And so you have to be cognizant of the history of how African Americans and people of color have been treated in the past by the medical professionals and the government. And you have to think about it in full circle and how it looks as a whole. So I completely agree. I think they should take the vaccine, but you have to understand where people are coming from and their perspective.
I do want to take a break. We are getting breaking news in that the Supreme Court is allowing the release of Donald Trump's tax returns to the New York prosecutor. The U.S. Supreme Court has declined to block a New York grand jury from getting President Trump's personal and corporate tax returns, a decisive defeat in his prolonged legal battle to keep his tax records out of the hands of investigators. So we will follow that. That just broke a moment ago.
So interesting. That is really interesting, Joe, because we didn't know whether the Supreme Court was playing games when they said send it back to the state and let the state, you know, the states and let them decide and all the rest of it. But it turns out they meant what they said.
We will certainly have more on that. We will talk about other issues and have more letters on the COVID issues as well when we come back. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back after this. So I promise we'll get back to the letters on the other story and talk about the COVID deaths nearing 500,000. But as I mentioned just before break, the breaking news is the Supreme Court cleared the way for a New York prosecutor to obtain former President Donald Trump's tax returns, dealing a massive loss to Trump, who has fiercely fought to shield his financial papers from prosecutors. The documents will be subjected to grand jury secrecy rules that restrict their public release. So, Allen and group, what does this ultimately mean? What can we extrapolate from this information? The former president obviously worked very hard to keep these from being released. So now what?
Well, I want to hear Malcolm on this one. I tell you the truth. There are two possible reasons. I tell you what I think is the truth. There are two possible reasons. Number one, it was just a power play on his part. He didn't want anybody pushing him around. He was going to show them all that he could do whatever he wanted and not release his returns. On the other hand, there may be something in there that is so damning and so impossible that it may by itself stop him from running for president another time, which he continually says he's going to do. And that's, I think, an appropriate way of doing it. Malcolm?
Yeah, I think that although this is going to be interesting, and I really do believe the Supreme Court held this up until after the inauguration deliberately.
Sure, sure.
They could have released this last November or October. And so they still played a political game with it. But as this information goes into, you know, the New York State law enforcement, and goes up into a grand jury and gets analyzed by this new hire that Cy Vance has, who is the head of a racketeering, corrupt influence organization investigator. I think it'll take quite a long time. New York State's vested interest in this is pretty simple. Trump declared his properties were worthless on paper, and then he went to investors and sold them, declaring they were extremely valuable. And that gave him the ability to cheat this state out of tax money. So it's the Al Capone theory, right? His accountants are the ones who are going to get him. But I think it won't be as cut and dried as we want. It sort of has taken on the old Hillary Clinton emails trope, where everyone wants that thing to happen. I don't want to see his tax return. I want to see the state of New York use those tax returns to bring him to justice.
Yes, but if the grand jury, right, Malcolm, if the grand jury indicts him, we're going to see those. We the people will see the returns.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know what? If they indict him, they're going to be indicting all his kids. They were part of this scheme. We know that from the Trump Foundation investigation, that they were neck deep in everything. The same way that his father was depositing money into his account when he was 3 months old, $100,000 at a time as a tax dodge, we're going to find that with his kids. And you know what? The way that Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka and all the rest behave, that will open up new investigations. And, you know, no better group of people deserves it.
Sienna.
Malcolm summed that up very well. But I will say that you have to remember that, you know, a convicted felon can run for president again. So the question is, how will this impact him, his political standing? I have no question that he'll be brought into court, that he'll have to, you know, go in front of a court and defend himself. But I don't know how that will affect his political standing and his effect on the Republican Party. That's what I think about those long-term implications.
Well, and it really depends on what's in there, right? I mean, of what, as Alan indicated, of what we're looking at, of what's being hidden. Libby.
I'm giddy. I'm sort of doing a little dance over here.
I like it when you're kidding.
Let's be real. I mean, you know, this is the beginning of the end. And this, on top of the lawsuits, the private and public lawsuits around the insurrection, the targeting of Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell and all the rest of them, you know, this just is one more swish in circling the drain. And it might take a little while, and he'll do all he can to dance around this, but the fact is the Supreme Court has ruled, and he's going to have to do it. And if he doesn't, he'll be held in contempt, and he could go to jail just for that alone.
Alan?
When you say the beginning of the end, Libby, the beginning of the end at the end was losing the election. Now we're going to we're going to get mail, right? We're going to get mail now. It's going to say, "What are you talking about Trump for? Biden is the president now." Okay, I'll try to give you my answer, although I'm not the whole show here. My answer is, we're talking about it because this guy almost brought us into fascism in this country and totalitarianism, and that's what he was trying to do. Hey, we better learn from it, and we better talk about it. And if it turns out he was a crook during all of this, this just adds to the story.
And it's not like we're promoting a Trump story of him going out and rallying his troops and putting him on a pedestal. You know, I'm sure Fox is now saying he's being victimized. But this is a legitimate news story. This isn't what we talked about last week of whether or not you want to give him more airtime just for breathing. This is a legitimate news story that will need to be covered and will be covered, because it is going to be one of the downfalls of the other guy, as Joe Biden calls him, of the orange menace. And, you know, I think it's worth covering. It's not like we're saying reelect him president. That's not this at all. That's not what this is about. This is about him using the office as well as everything that he's always had to break the law, to evade paying taxes, to put himself above the law. And it's worthwhile coverage.
We have 5 minutes or so. I'd like to go to some of the letters that we have on the COVID issue prior to our top of the hour break and news with Ray Graff. Tom writes, why is a technological giant like the United States having so much trouble getting on top of the COVID problem? In his farewell address, President Eisenhower warned us of the power of the military-industrial complex and of our proclivity to give it too much influence. I believe we have several such companies now, one of them being Big Health. Why is Big Health failing so miserably to meet our needs? Anyone want to chime in on that? Hearing no one.
Hearing no one.
I will move on to Mary's letter. There are several people in our small town who believe that the vaccine is a depopulation conspiracy and will kill us in 6 months. Or the vaccine contains nanobots that will enable the government to track us. If it were just a matter of their own health, we could say it's their choice. But one anti-masker with COVID infects others. It takes a village to beat the virus. How did the people who are spreading this nonsense get medical degrees? How can we convince our friends and neighbors to trust Dr. Fauci and not the pop-up supplement salespeople?
There's always a snake oil salesman around the corner. I mean, there always is. And there's always going to be people who are going to buy it. And, you know, that, but that's different from the real skepticism and warranted skepticism from communities of color. We have to remember the Tuskegee Airmen and, you know, those experiments and what happened to these folks. And so, you know, I mean, we don't forget what they did to twins in the camps during the Holocaust. And we cannot forget the medical experiments, the healthcare disparities, and the just the total denial of quality healthcare to communities of color. And that's why there's skepticism there. And we have to, as non-colored people, as people who are not of color, we have to speak out about this and say their fears are real. And we have to understand those fears, but yet we also have to work with those communities and the leaders in the communities to overcome those fears. I mean, I remember when the flu vaccine first came out, and Black pastors in Albany were taking those shots on the pulpit on Sundays to show folks it's okay. And the same thing happened around AIDS when it started to decimate the Black community and the brown community. And we have to do the same thing, and we have to be supportive. But there are going to be stupid white people, I have to say is the best way to put it, who will always fall for a snake oil salesman because it's easier.
That's absolutely right. And in fact, Libs, we have people around here where I live. You meet them at a cocktail party and you run the other way because they're so anti-vax, and they'll let you know.
Oh, they're nuts. Yeah.
Well, I think that's true.
Shane.
I've been in the Capitol when the anti-vaxxers are there. It is an unbelievable experience. And they are more rude and more destructive than the anti-choice people were when they were really organized. I mean, it was unbelievable.
One more letter before we take a break. Shane writes to us, and it's on this point. The news is grim, and sadly, this past week, I was at a funeral for someone who died from COVID, and people were openly discussing vaccine conspiracies and other QAnon misinformation about the virus. It's sad to say that even the death of a loved one cannot change people's opinions. That from Shane.
Well, yeah. There are a lot of people. There are a lot of people, you know, as they're dying. A lot of people as they're dying have said we should never have listened to him being Trump. I'm sorry,
right.
Malcolm.
Malcolm.
You know, I see a lot of this now, and you guys know my wife passed a year and a half ago before COVID, and now the COVID section of the National Cemetery at Washington's Crossing is huge. I mean, it's exploded. Compared to the previous year, it's an entirely new section of the cemetery. And, you know, these are veterans who were elderly, and this thing is real. And I have people telling me all the time it's a hoax. And the only way to stop this is you've got to publicly shame those people when they come out and start talking anti-vax. You've got to put it out into the airwaves that, you know, onto them, you know, in public, that they've got to stop talking like this. It's murderous the way that this virus is behaving. And it's the only way that you'll get anyone's attention and to break that cycle of lies. Yeah, they'll go home and sit behind a computer and do it. But I don't tolerate that talk in public at all in front of me.
I'm trying to do my share.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have much more to discuss. Alan Chartok, Sanna Friedman-Tolbert, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post on our panel this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. First News with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Sanna Friedman-Tolbert, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post. We have several letters. I want to get to those, and then we'll move on to other topics. Jill writes, I'm an African-American woman in her mid-60s. I've always heard about the Tuskegee experiment and Henrietta Lacks, but I don't understand why so many other African-Americans now are hesitant about this vaccine because of those atrocities. After all, if there was something hazardous or suspicious about the vaccine, why would so many white folks be getting it? We go to John, who said, has anyone heard about the fear-mongering against the COVID vaccine going around social media targeted at people of color? This sounds to me like a planned, intentional campaign to kill as many people of color as possible by scaring them away from getting the COVID vaccine. Let's see. Russ writes to us, a recent poll shows 58% of Republicans believing that Antifa led the assault on the Capitol. This despite the fact that they had not actually seen Antifa. Soon a rumor will flood the internet that the power outages in Texas were caused when AOC unleashed the Kraken. Nothing can be done except for increasing marginalization of this faction.
That is absolutely unbelievable, isn't it, Malcolm? I mean, the idea that Antifa went with everything we know. Now, one thing did happen that caused me some concern, and that's in New York State, there was a stabbing, I believe. And I believe that the guy who did it was on the Antifa side. And that, of course, is exactly why people should just stop that kind of stuff, you know, because the other guys are killing themselves and you don't want to give them any support.
Malcolm? Yeah, you know, you're looking at a form of mass delusion here that is absolutely, I didn't think that we could go any lower on this, but we obviously have 40,000 Trump supporters were there at the Stop the Steal rally, or what they called it, the Fight for Trump march. And Trump himself directed them. And they went there and they all live streamed it. And they were proud of it until the 7th of November, the next day when there was national outrage over the attack. And Trump himself that very night had mentioned to Mark Meadows, his chief of staff, that he heard it was Antifa. And, you know, Meadows and Kevin McCarthy, the House minority leader at that time, came out and said, no, it's our people. You can see it with your own eyes. This is where the delusion is deep. They don't believe what they see with their lying eyes. They only believe what they're told. And this is, you know, I'm speaking before the House Judiciary Committee on Homeland and a subcommittee on Homeland Security on Wednesday about how we got to this level. And it comes from the very fact that information warfare now is a core component of how their political organ body, you know, their political organ thinks. And if they can change reality, they will. And believe me, in no time, they're going to flip this story right after Trump starts speaking here next Sunday into tripling and quintupling down that everything they did over the last 4 years was correct. And it's all the news media and, you know, the liberal elites that caused all the troubles.
Let's see. We'll go back to Howard, who writes, a stench of
Trump permeates our democracy. You keep talking about him. It's vital to remember and take down his political supporters. That from Howard. Let's see. John, is the panel surprised that the Supreme Court, dominated by conservatives with three Trump appointees, is playing all these Trump-related decisions right down the middle legally? Anyone on that? All right. We go to Cynthia. So where does this leave Trump's accountant with the new tax release and investigations going forward? He got immunity during the Mueller investigation, and then we found out Mueller never even got the tax return. So can he still be brought forth now?
Is he still immunized? Immunized is the question. And I, damned if I know.
Let's see. We go to...
A quick comment.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, don't forget. Here's the cream on top of this little eclair. Everyone who was pardoned by Donald Trump can now be forced to testify without being able to plead the fifth. So Paul Manafort, anybody that even has a remote connection to him can be brought up to discuss all of these affairs. Just a little FYI.
A little bon mot.
Interesting. And they can do that because basically they're immunized, right? And they can, and since they are, they can be asked without Fifth Amendment fears. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, but the best part is they can come up and they must testify. If they lie and commit perjury, their pardon doesn't cover that. That's a new crime. I mean, they can't say, I can't answer that question to not incriminate myself. They must answer now. That's the double-edged sword of a pardon.
And that's why the idea of a commission is a good one, because especially if commission is given these extraordinary powers and, you know, these people ignore it, that could be at their own risk.
Yeah.
Let's see. We'll go to Jason. As much as I would like to see the former president go to prison, I would say there is between 0 and 10% chance that he does and end up behind bars. He's a wealthy white guy who is president of the United States. He walks away from this further tarnished, but free is my guess. Then we go to John. Is the panel surprised that the Supreme Court, dominated by conservatives with three Trump appointees, is playing all these Trump-related decisions right down the middle legally? Did I read that one before?
No, but it doesn't matter. It's well worth reading it again because we don't know. The first thing I did was to ask Ian Pickus, our wonderful news director, if there was a breakdown of how the justices voted on this one-line opinion. And the answer is no, there wasn't. But we know that there are at least two of them, Thomas and what's-his-face, who have consistently voted with the president no matter what.
All right. I want to go to just a couple more things here before we break at the bottom of the hour. And one of them is Merrick Garland, who is now on Capitol Hill testifying to become Attorney General of the United States. So, Alan, what do you think of his chances here getting through?
Oh, no, he'll get through. I don't think there's any question he's going to get through. They have the votes. The Democrats have the votes. You know, even that stinker from West Virginia isn't going to interfere on this one. On the other one, yes. That way he has his creds with his right-wing constituency, even though he's a Democrat. But no, I think Garland goes through. You know, he's the president's choice. How could you deny him?
Sienna?
I think he's going to get through, and I'm excited about Judge Garland. I was excited about him 5 years ago. I'm excited about him now being Attorney General. We really need him right now. As we know, he was one of the prosecutors for the Oklahoma bombing. So I think he's going to do a really good job leading this charge against what happened on January 6th and also his dedication to civil rights. I'm excited about Judge Garland a lot.
Libby?
I can't wait. for an attorney general who will actually do a job.
Yeah, but he's got a problem, right, Libby? And his problem is this. The other guy so politicized the office and who ran at the last minute, of course, Barr. But mm-hmm. He's got to show that he is not going to be a political actor, that he is going to do the job.
His tenure on the federal bench, I think, you know, underscores his ability to do that and to not politicize the office. And, you know, I think the Dems will ask him these questions. The Republicans will ask the questions, and it'll be so disingenuous. But I think he'll get approved, and it'll go through. It'll make the Republicans look foolish, given everything that's gone on. The fact that they're losing support around the stimulus package. Not that the two are related, but they are. You know, more and more people want the stimulus package to go through, including the Republican base or part of the Republican base. Those who are leaving the Republican Party, I guess, is what you can say. So the fiscally conservative folks with a brain, you know, they want this stimulus package to go through. They want government to get back to normal. They want an attorney general who's going to go after criminals and not do a president's bidding. And I think that that's what will happen. And I think Merrick Garland's history and record speaks for itself. And I might be being a little, you know, pie in the sky about this, but it'll be bad for the Republicans if they try to stonewall this.
Well, what they're going to do is obviously go for ask the most embarrassing questions they can find, like, Biden's son and Hunter, and maybe even go back to Hillary, and those are the things
Will you go after them? Will you go after them is going to be the question.
Yes,
and the answer will be if there is reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? That's where they get us. And the Republicans have politicized the attorney general's position to make him a personal attack dog of mm-hmm. the president. So now they're going to try to characterize through this hearing. And I've got it on screen. I haven't. They haven't gotten the questioning. But they're going to characterize it that he is Joe Biden's attack dog and that he will ignore Hillary and all the rest. And they will. You know, he's going to turn out to be what we know he's going to be, which is a generally good person who will answer those questions in such a way that it will be neutral. But for the Republicans, it'll be a knife against us that, yeah, if I find something about Hunter Biden, I'll investigate it. Yeah, if I find something about Hillary, equal justice under the law. This is a guy who's going to walk in and he's going to have every inspector general in every major office of the executive do reviews and find that there were a lot of crimes going on. You know that there were people making money during this. They fired most of the inspector generals, and those guys are going to come in and they're going to start forwarding criminal charges up to the Justice Department, and the Republicans are going to hammer us with the fact that the attorney general is actually doing his job.
But on the other hand, in terms of this hearing, Merrick Garland, if they raise Hillary, if they raise Hunter Biden, Merrick Garland can simply say, well, Attorney General Barr didn't find anything and didn't go after them.
Well, that's one thing they could do. He could also say, look, I'm not in the office yet. I have to study everything.
Right.
And, you know, that's mm-hmm. what he will say.
Malcolm, you were going to say something other than
that? No, that she had a good comment.
Okay, excellent.
Oh, thank you.
I love when you all get along. That makes it so much easier. All right, let's go.
It's so rare.
Yeah. Let's go to the Biden immigration plan. Let's see. And a reminder that Sienna is watching this and an expert on this, so we'll go to her. The proposal unveiled by Democrats on Capitol Hill offers an 8-year path to citizenship for most of the 11 million undocumented immigrants in the United States, eliminates restrictions on family-based immigration, and expands worker visas. Senator Ted Cruz's decision to fly to Cancun as Texas was battered by a storm sparks an outcry. I'm not sure what that has to do with one, but anyway. So rolling out the immigration plan, offering an 8-year path to citizenship. We're here today because last November, 80 million Americans voted against Donald Trump and against everything he stood for, said Senator Bob Menendez, Democrat of New Jersey, said at a virtual news conference. They voted to restore common sense, compassion, and competence in our government. And part of that mandate is fixing our immigration system, which is a cornerstone of Trump's hateful horror show. So, Sienna, let us begin with you and your thoughts on that language.
It was. And so what I will say is that this bill is ideal for my clients, for immigrants coming into the country. It has a lot of good benefits to the immigration process. But here's the problem. When the Trump administration started its policies in the Department of Homeland Security, it started day one with the Muslim and travel ban. And he just hammered at the immigration system for the last 4 years, constantly hammering, constantly putting in regulations and policies that hampered individuals' ability to become a green card holder, to enter the U.S., to file asylum. And we have been dealing with this for the last 4 years. And I think the problem is on January 20th at 12:01 p.m., I started getting calls from clients and people around the community wanting to know, you know, what has changed. I'm hearing that Biden's going to change this. And what we've seen so far, and realistically, is there's been a lot of review right now of Trump's policies, but we haven't seen any concrete changes. And we are still, as an immigration attorney, I feel we are still practicing under Trump administration policies, and that's problematic. So we think the bill is a great, you know, everyone in the community is excited about the bill. Everyone in the community thinks there's really good things that could happen with the immigration bill. But we've all been here before with comprehensive immigration reform.
Right.
We've all seen other administrations try to get this through. And so what we want to see from the Biden administration, and more importantly, from the future attorney general as well, who impacts the immigration court and the laws and policies there, are we trying to see feasible, tangible rollbacks of what happened.
Alan?
Well, you know, there's a very inconvenient question here. You know, most of us who are thinking people, I think, just think what's happened with immigration and our immigration laws and Trump taking advantage of the situation to be, horrible. But the real question is, how do the American people feel about this? I suspect Trump was playing on this because, you know, there are a lot of people who say, pull up the gangplank. I'm the last one in. We don't want anybody else here. Now, we have a fairly liberal panel, I think it's fair to say. But you better believe that there is this issue as to what people are thinking about you know, opening up the borders again.
I would push back on that, Alan, just to say a lot of people who thought they wanted to push to, you know, put the wall up are seeing the benefits of immigration over the last 4 years.
Yeah,
I have dairy farmers and people in Saratoga who, what you would say is they're pretty conservative or very moderate, who now don't have workers. They can't find anyone to milk their cows.
Yeah,
they can't find anyone to work in Saratoga. And so you're seeing this switch because people are starting to understand the underpinnings and the importance of immigration in the U.S.
Well, Sienna, let me push back against what not against what you're saying. I would be delighted to see the immigration laws, the immigration process reformed and let people come into this country. I think it's where we've always lived. I'm just wondering whether or not when the polls are done, you're going to see, even though there are specific groups, as you say, who benefit from using immigrants, as I always have, on, you know, farms and places like that, whether or not that transcends to the whole American people. I'm just trying to think this thing through, that's all.
Malcolm?
I feel strongly both ways. you know, the funny thing is, as you know, I monitor these right-wing forums in real time. I get up at 3 in the morning and I listen to watch their Telegram channels. And the immigration, the policy of allowing people to petition in the United States, separating the, you know, bringing the children back to their parents, canceling the wall contract, that is just now starting to pick up steam, only in light of the Texas power outage. There's a lot more activity going on with regards to, by the way, someone made a previous comment about AOC. They believe AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they believe she caused the power outage. And in their crazed minds, the Green New Deal is actually policy and legislation, and it collapsed the Texas grid. Mm-hmm. So that's where most of their thoughts are. They really haven't shifted back to immigration. But believe me, come Sunday, Donald Trump at the Conservative Political Action Committee is going to hammer that America's under attack. And I wouldn't be surprised if you suddenly start seeing caravans pop up in the Central America and start heading to the United States. There was a lot of suspicion 3 years ago that these were actually being paid for by business interests in Latin America. And there's some evidence to that effect. So we'll see it all come back.
Libby?
I it's all so outrageous, unbelievable to me that what's going on in Texas, what Malcolm was saying, that they're blaming this on the Green New Deal and AOC and windmills. And, you know, they're just being stupid. I mean, I can't put it any more simply than that. You know, people want to believe what they want to believe, regardless of the facts. And yes, Trump will try and his minions will try to make hay out of this. But I have a feeling that given what's gone on in Texas, given how close things have been down there, how it's becoming more purple, we might see a change in the state's electorate. And people may move over to the Democratic line. I mean, I have somebody from high school who I see on Facebook, right? And she lives in Dallas, and her apartment got totally destroyed. And then somebody came in and robbed her, and it was just like add insult to injury. They're going to try to demonize everybody. They'll blame. I mean, I'm waiting for them to blame all the folks waiting at the border for this. I mean, who knows how they'll do that? But we, for a very long time, we've needed immigration reform, because I know that's where this conversation started. And we have to do what's right. And we also have to remember that we're all children of immigrants, unless you're Native American. You know, I'm second generation. Alan, I think you're first generation. You know, there are some of us who have been here for a very, very long time, but we're all children of immigrants, and we all have to recognize the value and the power that immigrants have brought to this country. That it was built on their backs.
Yeah, technical point here.
30 seconds, but go ahead.
We're the children of hostages. We were not.
Yes, you are the children of hostages.
Very good point.
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a break there. When we come back, we will have our last round with our wonderful panel this morning, Alan Chartok, Santa Friedman-Tolbert, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Good morning. Thank you very much for being with us and for listening this morning. Always a pleasure to have you. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Sanna Friedman-Tolbert, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post make up our panel. We do have some letters, and then I'm going to move on to some other subjects. Erica says this one is for Sienna. What is your take on amnesty for immigrants? Not personally, of course, but with all factors considered. I feel as though if you have been here a while, say 5 years, and you work and are just living your life, you deserve a path to citizenship. It will cost so much more to extradite or process an immigrant who is already just living regularly among us and supporting the economy. It's such a provocative approach. It infuriates me that no one adds the cost. Taxpayers pay either way.
I like the idea of a pathway for, but amnesty seems so. There was amnesty, I think, back in the 70s. It was before I started practicing, really. I remember it. But as long as someone's a taxpayer, they have no criminal history, they've been here for a significant amount of time, they can show that they have assets or they are a contribution to the U.S. economy and the U.S. in general, I think you should be able to put forth that application to the Department of Homeland Security, and they should be allowed to decide whether or not this individual can remain in the U.S.
All right. Anybody else on that? Okay. Let me see. We'll go to this letter, too. If a commission is formed and authorized to investigate January 6, would hearings be televised? Would congressional hearings into 1-6 be televised?
You bet they would.
Yeah,
you bet they
so.
Would. Of course they will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. The big question is if, though, right? I mean, that's where we are at this point. Okay. Let's go and move on to other stuff here. And we'll talk a little bit about Texas. We haven't talked about that yet today, but it remains to be the big story and one that we talked about a great deal last week. And, you know, now that I think we got the Ted Cruz thing settled, we're...
No, don't let it go yet.
So now everyone in Texas seems to be angry at Greg Abbott, the governor, where anger is growing in the deadly storm's wake. It was clear by Tuesday afternoon that Texas was in a full-blown crisis, and Governor Greg Abbott had largely been out of sight. Not Cancun out of sight, but still out of sight. More than 4 million households did not have power amid dangerously low temperatures, and an increasing number did not have heat or running water. Some families were burning furniture to stay warm, grocery stores were emptying, and people were dying. In the freezing darkness, many desperate Texans felt they were left to fend for themselves. Abbott emerged that evening for a series of television interviews. In short, curt sentences, he told Texans in the Lubbock and Houston areas that he had issued an emergency order and called for an immediate legislative investigation of the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, which operates the electrical grid. He angrily accused the council of not having a backup power supply and not sharing information with Texans, even with the governor of Texas. Then he went on Fox News. He said this when he went on Fox News. This shows how the Green New Deal would be deadly, a deadly deal for the U.S., United States of America. Looking more relaxed as he chatted with host Sean Hannity, falsely blaming the state's problems on environmental policies pushed by liberals. This deadly disaster is one in a series that Abbott has faced in 6 years as governor. Hurricane Harvey in 2017, which resulted in the deaths of 68 people, at least six major mass shootings that left more than 70 people dead, and a pandemic that has killed 42,000 in his state. Now, at least 32 people have died in Texas because of the storm. In each crisis, Abbott often carefully studied the situation and its political ramifications before taking action, usually demanding future legislative changes that may never happen. He is known to deliver different messages to the various constituents of his state, all while trying to build a national profile as a conservative leader. In the past, this approach seems to have worked, and many Texans have instead focused on economic gains the state has made under the governor's leadership. Over his tenure, an estimated 3 million people have moved to Texas, many lured to metro areas by plentiful jobs. So where are we now? Critics have charged that the Abbott administration's response to the storm has at times resembled the government failures after Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans in 2005. As of Sunday, more than 14 million Texans were under orders to boil their water before drinking it or did not have water at all. Across the state's neighbors lined up at municipal spigots for water, melted snow to flush their toilets, and lined up for food at poorly stocked grocery stores. So, Alan, obviously there is a lot of blame to go around. How much of it should fall on the governor's shoulders?
Well, look, here's the thing. Every time there's a crisis, somebody's got to get blamed. That's obvious. People's animus has to have a place to go. And in this case, I think it's deserved because he didn't do much in the beginning until he really had to get going. And then he did it. What I'm interested in is the politics of the situation where we do know that Texas has been inching towards the blue, you know, from the red. It's been inching towards the blue. How long do people remember something like this? Do they say right now they're all everybody's angry and, you know, you got to find a place to go and you got to put place to find that put that anger and Abbott is convenient and should be. But nevertheless, you know, I think he's up for election in 2 years from now. Is that right?
Yeah,
2 years from now. That's a long time in politics, a long time. So we'll see.
But it's not a long time when you're talking about people who now have to file for bankruptcy because of the spike in the their electric bills going from $600 a month, which I found to be a little outrageous, to $17,000 because of how they were on these variable plans. And that none of these people should be forced to pay those bills at all.
And he's saying that, and by the way, Abbott sees his train coming down the track and says there won't have to be.
Yeah, right. And I'll believe that when I actually see that happening. But then you're going to have more. This is a worse natural disaster than the hurricane was, Harvey, I think it was, and the one that hit Houston. And it's going to be bigger. And it's going to take longer for people to rebuild. So while some people with means will be able to rebuild and not have to worry about it, those without will remember this and will remember it as they go into the November elections in 2023 or 2022. I just think that it's not going to be a piece of cake for him for re-election. And I think people will remember what has happened. And the fact that they let the electrical grid and the electrical services in Texas become so deregulated that they couldn't manage to fix this quickly. And that's why it was the deregulation that caused this. And that's the problem. And that's big money, fossil fuel dependent Texas.
Alan?
Spoken like a true Democrat.
Thank you. proud.
Well, you may be right. You may be right. And you may be wrong. There's a song there somewhere. But yes. I can tell you that, you know, Texas has been a reliable Republican state. And, you know, I find that problematic for me as an individual and as a political person. Nevertheless, we'll have to see whether or not memories are that long.
Malcolm. Is Malcolm still with us? All right. Don't know.
I don't know.
that's not him calling. So we'll go to Sienna. Sienna.
I used to live in Austin, Texas, so I have a lot of I have a lot of friends down there, and I can tell you that they describe it grilling on their grilling their meals, all their meals, fighting for charcoal in Home Depot, looking for just regular logs, just the heat for warmth, hiding, like all huddling together, families with kids, just trying to stay warm in 30 degree weather. And so I think it's really going to be a long lasting impact. And for what we're hearing from the climate change experts, is that this is not going to be the first time that Texas is going to be hit with this kind of weather. And so what's going to be more interesting to see, how does Texas respond?
Right.
Do they regulate? Do they ask these electrical companies to start winterizing? So that's what's going to be more interesting going forward. But I don't think they're going to forget anytime soon. But granted, as Alan has already pointed out, I lived in Austin, which is probably the most liberal city in Texas. So, you know.
Or anywhere in the United States. It's a terrific town, yeah.
It is a terrific town. So, but yeah, the impact is long-lasting for these families and their kids.
Libby, is the cat okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, you know.
We've had several calls with people who said, we're used to the cuckoo clock, but what's the new sound?
We just want to
the
make
cat,
sure.
The cat, you know, it's Smudge Head's, I don't know, maybe a psychotic break. We're not quite sure. She does this 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 times a day, and it is what it is. But she's fine. She's fat. She's happy. She's fed.
That's all we should ask for in life, right, in totality. Smudge Head, is that the cat's name?
Smudge.
Okay. All right. All right. And John writes to us, last letter we have to go here. Is this the same Texas that threatens to secede every few years? Who deports the federal government? Texas tough? And now their hands are looking for a bailout. That from John. So we will end there. My thanks to everybody for being with us this morning. So appreciate your time. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks to Sienna and Malcolm and Libby. We will be back after this break.